Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the June 24th, 2012 edition of Don't Let It Go Unheard. It's the podcast devoted to the discussion of news and politics from the perspective of Ayn Rand's philosophy, Objectivism. I'm your host, Amy Peikoff, and here are stories that I would like to talk about with you today. First, just as a Muslim Brotherhood candidate wins the Egyptian presidency and his supporters call for a renewed drive to establish an Islamic caliphate with Jerusalem as its capital, here in the United States, our Department of Defense suspends a military instructor for including in a course material that criticizes Islam. Then, why you should vote for me, or even better, vote for yourself instead of Gary Johnson. Third, disturbing evidence surfaces this week of Obama's desperation to win, and more also if there is time. If you want to call in and talk about these topics, the number to use is 760-888-5817. Again, that's 760-888-5817. You can also see that on the Blog Talk Radio page throughout the course of the show. You can also join in the chat room. People are starting to fill in the chat room there. If you see, those of you who are sitting in the chat room, in the top, I have posted a link to where this show's feed appears in iTunes. iTunes store now carries the Blog Talk Radio feed for this show, and I would appreciate it if you guys are regular listeners to the show, you enjoy the show, please click on that link, then click on the little button that says view in iTunes, and that will enable you to leave ratings and reviews for this show, which are all important for attracting even more listeners, which would be great. So go ahead and click on that and follow through and give us a few ratings and reviews. That is the payment we ask for doing all this incredible work for you today. Okay, let me go ahead and get started on our stories. As some of you know, Ayn Rand said, and this is a quote that I put out on the Ayn Rand bot periodically, she said, "Never think of pain or danger or enemies a moment longer than is necessary to fight them." And I try not to do this with respect to Islam, because Islam is just such an unpleasant topic. But this week we have two stories that were pretty important that I figure we should discuss. The first, many of you have seen, and this was actually a headline on Drudge for about a day or so. Morsi, his name is Mohamed Morsi. He wins Egypt's presidential election. He is a Muslim Brotherhood candidate. And this is the product of the so-called Arab Spring, of which we have been active supporters.
Obama congratulated Morsi, by the way.
Obama did congratulate him?
The White House congratulated, yes.
Okay, I had not seen in the story that the White House had congratulated Morsi, but Bosch is telling me that that has happened as well. As we'll see, Netanyahu has made a statement, and that was disappointing to me, but... Yeah. Let me give you the story here. I've got the story from Al Jazeera, published or actually modified June 24th, which is today, earlier today. Muslim Brotherhood candidate declared the official winner with 13.2 million votes. It says tens of thousands of people flocked to Tahrir Square on Sunday to celebrate Morsi's victory. And the Muslim Brotherhood's Mohamed Morsi has officially won Egypt's presidential election and will be the country's next president, the
president?
Election commission has announced. Yeah, president.
Not dictator?
I mean, they call him president. Oh. You know, it's for those of you who know philosophy, it's nominalism. They just kind of make up whatever they want. They call a president somebody who might not even resemble what anybody else in the Western world calls a president.
Well, that's the problem.
But that's what he is.
That's the problem with language today.
Yeah, so Morsi picked up 13.2 million votes out of just over 26 million, which gave him about a 51% fraction of the vote. His competitor, Ahmed Shafiq, the final prime minister who was under Mubarak, he received 12.3 million. Mubarak. Okay, I'm sorry. I mispronounced these poor guys' names, right? Where is Mubarak? Is he dead already?
He's maybe dead.
That's
what they said, yeah.
Okay. So it says more than 800,000 ballots, more than 800,000 ballots, which is enough, I think, to make up for this difference here, were invalidated, conveniently. So it makes you wonder whether there was a stolen election.
So one guy was for Islam, the other guy was for Islam, and what was the difference between the two?
All I know is that the people who have any hope for Egypt were in favor of this guy Shafiq, that he was actually.
And of course he'd lose because this is,
Well, I mean, I guess he has to lose. So was the election stolen? There's a man named Farouk Sultan, and he's the head of the election commission. He delivered a long speech, which is suspicious, before announcing the results, in which he defended the body's independence and integrity. So the election commission is independent and has integrity, amidst what he called meddling by unnamed political factions. The two candidates, between them, filed 456 complaints about the electoral process, Sultan said. Most of them were allegations of either forgery or Christian voters being blocked from polling stations in Upper Egypt. Gee, I wonder why they would want to block Christians from the polling stations, right?
Because they would have voted for the Muslim Sisterhood, maybe.
I don't know. The vast majority of the complaints were dismissed. Tahrir Square erupted into celebration after Morsi's victory was announced. Tens of thousands of his supporters waved Egyptian flags and chanted, "God is great," and "Down with military rule." Then there was all sorts of congratulations for Egypt's new president. Mohamed Hussein Tantawi, who is the military ruler, congratulated him on his victory. Reactions also trickled in from around the world. Governments of Turkey, United Arab Emirates, and the Palestinian Authority congratulated. But here's the disturbing one. Benjamin Netanyahu, the Israeli prime minister, said in a statement that he, quote, respects the outcome, end quote, of the election, and, quote, expects to continue cooperation with the Egyptian administration, end quote.
That's pathetic. It is pathetic.
Yes, it is.
And what did the other guest side say?
The other side, in terms of the one that lost the election?
No.
There has been no reaction.
No, the one that won, meaning he says he's willing to work with them. And what did they say? They want to...
There's been no statement from him, of course. We'll talk about that in a minute.
Doesn't he think that that's fighting words?
Yeah, Benjamin Netanyahu, yes, he's going to respect the outcome of the election, but as we'll see later, I don't think
he's going to pay...
Yeah, I don't think you should respect that at all. A bishop who was a caretaker pope of Egypt's Coptic Church, he issued a short statement congratulating Morsi. I guess he feels like he has to placate him. The Coptic community makes up about 10% of Egypt's population, and some were worried by Morsi's candidacy, fearing that his government would restrict their personal freedoms. And again, as we'll see, I think there is reason to believe that.
Him congratulating him is saying, basically, don't kill me.
Yes.
Don't kill me. Don't kill us, please. Thank you.
Yes, exactly. Gehad El Haddad, who's Morsi's campaign spokesman, said in an interview shortly after the results were announced that Morsi would work to be a, quote, president for all Egyptians.
For all time also?
And again, I don't think we have reason to believe him. The president-elect is supposed to take his oath of office later this month, which is really by this Friday. And that's going to be in front of the country's Supreme Court. But Morsi symbolically has said that he wants to take his oath in front of Parliament, which is, according to him, quote, the only elected institution, end quote, in the country. If you remember, the military leadership in Egypt had basically dismissed the Parliament.
Right.
Basically said, we're going to dissolve the Parliament.
Yeah.
The Parliament was completely ruled, the majority of the Parliament, by the Muslim Brotherhood, and the military had dissolved them. But now, symbolically, Morsi says, no, I'll take the oath in front of Parliament. So it's going to be another big battle there. The Muslim Brotherhood said in a statement that Morsi had resigned his positions both in the Brotherhood and in its Freedom and Justice Party, fulfilling a campaign pledge.
Oh, man. Because now he says, well, the Brotherhood is in control of the entire country now, so I don't have to, you know, I'm going to pretend that I'm not him.
I mean, this could be
he's the figurehead. He's
complete Takiya.
Of course.
Yeah.
The Muslim Brotherhood, they're the bad guys. I mean, they're the ultimate stealth jihadists, but also Al-Qaeda came from them. So they're, you know, they're the bad guys, and they won.
And, I mean, they're perfectly happy to have him resign his official position because, after all...
He'll be doing their bidding.
Yeah, he's going to be doing their bidding. And as we'll see, I've got a quote from him later that is going to make you feel all warm and fuzzy.
Yay.
Morsi's victory caps off more than a week of behind-the-scenes negotiations between the Brotherhood and the ruling Supreme Council of the Armed Forces. So, I mean, you think elections are where it's at, but behind the scenes, you've got the Muslim Brotherhood negotiating with the military there. Morsi claimed victory just hours after the election, based on unofficial numbers tallied by the Brotherhood. How convenient. It says, but the commission delayed its official announcement until Sunday. So Lord knows what is going on behind the
Allah
scenes.
Allah knows.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Okay. In this context, we can't say Lord knows. In the intervening days, Karait al-Shatir, the Brotherhood's political boss, met generals from the SCAF at least once. Sources say they were negotiating exactly what powers the president will have. And maybe some of you have seen this, but the military, just before these election results were finalized, decided that they would go ahead and limit the powers of the president.
Right, right.
So, the rest of the story talks about what sort of powers he would have. For instance, the president can declare war only with the approval of the military council. Also, the SCAF is going to keep control of legislative power and the budget until a new parliament is elected, I guess one that they approve of.
They mentioned war first, though, right?
Yes, war first. Yeah.
War first and the old things, whatever.
I mean, war is most important for them right now because that seems to be the thing that's really on their minds, as we'll see in a second here. So the Egyptians went to the polls in November to elect a legislature, and if you remember, we did talk about this, and the Freedom and Justice Party, the Muslim Brotherhood's political arm, won resoundingly those
Freedom
elections.
Freedom and Justice.
But then the legislature was dissolved earlier this month because they wanted to say, and that supposedly the High Court in Egypt found parts of the electoral law to be unconstitutional. So it's a mess over there. It's unclear how much political power he's going to have. But he's already, as we saw, being recognized by leaders throughout the world. And if it's true that our wonderful leader, Obama, has congratulated him, this is quite sad.
We're looking forward to working with them, as we said.
Yeah.
Well, this is what he wanted.
Yeah. Michael in the chat room says, Freedom and Justice. The name is the Freedom and Justice Party. That's a joke. Completely a total joke. Next story I want to share with you, which will give you a little bit more about the meaning of this, is a Reuters story, again published today, June 24th. Headline, Islamist Joy as Morsi Elected Egypt President. From Cairo, they say that the Islamist Mohamed Morsi was declared Egypt's first freely elected president. I have doubts about that. Sparking joy among his Muslim Brotherhood supporters on the streets who vowed to continue a struggle to take power from the generals who retain ultimate control. So they do not want to give up. The military doesn't want to give up the power, and they want to go ahead and take it back from them. Brotherhood officials speaking as supporters turned Cairo's Tahrir Square into a roaring sea of flags and chants of... Go ahead, Bosh.
Allahu Akbar.
Yeah, he knows
God
that.
God is greatest.
Yes. Did they say
death to America?
No, not there.
They didn't quote him yet.
Okay. Yeah. Just no death to America, but we'll see what they did say. They said that they would press on with protest vigils to demand that the ruling military council cancel the dissolution of the parliament and a decree which gave the generals the powers to restrict the president. Here they're saying, speak, have no fear, the military must go, the crowds on Tahrir Square chanted.
Because they want to take over the military. That's...
And the story here reminds us that this was the seat of the Arab Spring Revolution, which of course prompted the fellow officers to push Mubarak aside to please them. Or maybe
Mubarak. Maybe that's a better pronunciation.
I don't know. Yeah. We could fight over pronunciation. I really don't care. And he's near dead anyway, so he can't be offended, right?
Yeah, he's almost
right?
dead. I think he's half dead.
Okay. If he listens to this show, I'd be very surprised. He could learn a lot if he did listen to this show, but
yes.
Yeah.
He converted to reality.
Yeah. It's probably too late for him. There were some isolated scuffles in parts of Cairo between rival groups. Several hundred Shafiq supporters in the middle-class suburb of Nasser City chanted, "Save Egypt, the Brotherhood will destroy it." Okay, so I think the Shafiq supporters know something.
Yeah.
Soldiers tried to just keep traffic moving. Who knows where they lie?
No, there are some decent human beings there who have not been totally wiped out by Islam, and they're hopeless right now.
Yeah,
it's hopeless for them.
The protests go on. Morsi, they say, is the first truly democratically elected president in Egypt. That's a quotation conveniently from the Muslim Brotherhood official Yasir Ali. He told Reuters.
Now, whenever they, it's like whenever they say something like Obama, when they declare something, it's an absolute lie.
Yeah.
I mean,
the only thing is that they haven't picked up on Obama's "Let me be clear," right? So he should say,
right.
"Let me be clear." Morsi is the
first truly democratically. Morsi is the first truly democratically elected president of Egypt and Islam is peace.
Right.
Yeah.
There you go.
Okay.
This is Ali continuing, he has the legitimacy and will sit down with the military council and all the political forces to resolve the outstanding issues over parliament and the constitutional decree and the newly imposed emergency law, which we don't even know about that one. I'm sure that's a peach as well. Another official at the movement's headquarters, this Haddad, he is the campaign spokesman. He said demonstrations would also continue to press the army. Quote, "The peaceful protests will continue in the squares and across Egypt. The struggle for a new Egypt is just beginning."
Yeah.
End quote. Those who voted for Shafiq as a bulwark against a religious rule that they fear will mean intolerance and alienation from the West were fearful. Businessman Maged Abdel Wadud, I don't know. I'm butchering these names. He's a 45-year-old man. He had gathered with others at a hotel hoping to greet a victorious Shafiq. He said, quote, "This is a very bad day for Egypt. I am so upset. I can't imagine this man becoming a president of Egypt. This is the beginning of the end for Egypt." End quote. Now, when you hear that quotation, what do you think of?
I think,
As I read it, I thought of something very particular.
Well, you tell me because I know what I'm thinking of. It's something that...
I'm thinking of when Obama won.
Yes.
I am so upset. I can't imagine
this man becoming
a president of America. This is the beginning of the...
Very good.
So this
but also one thing, this guy is more in sync with Islam, with this innocent guy's religion than he is. You know what I'm saying? He's in bed with it. He's in sync with it. So
yeah.
They have to appreciate that. They have to appreciate that. This is the guy. This is Islam in action. That's all. But yeah, you're right about the Obama thing.
Yeah, stories continue. The Western powers and Israel have been concerned about the Islamist turn in Egypt. But Washington and Europe, both big aid donors.
I have a little problem out there.
Yeah, someone's having a little problem with the player out there. I hope it works.
Two people.
We got two people. Yeah. So the player on Blog Talk Radio is
I'm sorry, everyone.
Yeah, I hope it works. Sometimes people do have to reboot, so that might happen to you guys sometimes.
The,
if you do ever have problems. Try reloading the page, says Odegaard
in the
chat.
And the recorded show should be fine.
Yeah, the recorded show usually comes out fine. So I am sorry for people sometimes to have a little blip on the live feed. It is live internet. Sometimes there are issues. So in any event here, so the Western powers and Israel are big aid donors, and they have pressed the military to accept democracy while urging the Brotherhood to respect all Egyptian rights. So they want to have it both ways. They don't want to have military rule. That just sounds too dictatorship-like, right? So they want them to respect democracy, but they know that the result of a so-called democratic election there in Egypt is going to be the Muslim Brotherhood as a majority. So they'll play the other side and say, come on, Muslim Brotherhood, you said you're secular.
That's right.
You should respect the rights of all Egyptians.
Right. An Obama official referred to them as a secular, the Muslim Brotherhood.
Right. Here's a senior Western diplomat. They won't tell us who it is.
No name.
Just a senior Western diplomat, some unnamed person who doesn't want to
die.
Yeah, I guess. Says, this is a truly historic moment for Egypt, a triumph over the politics of fear and prejudice. Egypt has a civilian democratically elected president for the first time in its history. The Muslim Brotherhood the Muslim Brotherhood are far from a perfect organization, but Morsi's re-election represents a genuine result for the revolution, end quote. So this
far
guy is saying, perfect. Look, the Arab Spring is working, right?
Oh, man.
He said he did not expect the movement to push its complaints so far as to provoke the military council to react and take from the presidency the powers it still has. He says the Muslim Brotherhood are going to take the presidency, even though it's imperfect, it's better than none at all.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's part of compromise. That's what they have to have there.
What passes political for liberals in Egypt? I mean, what passes? It says liberals cautious.
I think liberals are people who don't want to be killed.
Yeah, I think so. I think you're
in
right.
In Egypt, probably,
right?
So it says liberals cautious. Half of those who voted in last month's first round of the election backed neither Morsi nor Shafik, and many who voted in the runoff voted negatively, either against Morsi's religious agenda or against Shafik as a symbol of military rule. Then it says liberal member of parliament said on Twitter the following, quote, I salute the elected president and I say to him that he faces a great mission, reassuring the 48% of the citizens who did not give their votes to him that he becomes a president for all Egyptians and he must guarantee democracy, end quote. And a bunch of people congratulating him. It's a salute to the revolution. The will of the people was able to bring down the old regime. Morsi was a U.S.-educated engineer who spent time in jail under Mubarak, and so a spokesman for him said, quote, this is a testament to the resolve of the Egyptian people to make their voice heard.
Is he named after Morsi, the British singer with the Smiths? Is that Morsi?
Well, that would be about right because of the malevolence of both would be comparable, I would say.
Excellent.
Shafik was a former Air Force commander, and he was Mubarak's last prime minister. He has offered no immediate reaction.
Is he alive? I'm sure.
Yeah, who even knows, right? Morsi won the first round ballot in May with a little under a quarter of the vote. I guess they had multiple candidates, and then they have this runoff, which we've seen also in France. He pledged to form an inclusive government to appeal to the many Egyptians, including a large Christian minority, who are anxious over religious rule. Then, listen, here comes your money quote from Morsi. Morsi has promised a moderate Islamist agenda to steer Egypt into a new democratic era.
Moderate evil.
Yeah, where autocracy will be replaced by transparent government. Oh, God.
Oh, no.
If it's Obama-style transparency, we're in trouble. Obama's executive privilege-claiming style transparency, right? Respects human rights. And revives
well,
the
he
fortune.
Well, he means Muslim rights because they're human, non-Muslim.
Well, and that's the thing I always wonder, you know, when you have these quotes and they talk about treating everybody well, do they mean only Muslims,
yes,
right?
Yes, they do.
Anyway, so he respects human rights and revives the fortune of a powerful Arab state long in decline. Morsi is promising a, quote, Egyptian renaissance, with an Islamic foundation, end quote.
I'm sorry, that's funny.
So
the Muslims rejected the Enlightenment. They rejected everything.
Well, and this
when
is,
they
you
came
know,
their way.
Renaissance just means rebirth, okay?
Yeah.
So, but when we in the West think Renaissance, we think of the Western Renaissance, which is the rebirth of respect for reason and the application of reason in all the different fields of culture.
Is that what he means? He means respect for reason with an Islamic base.
Egyptian Renaissance with an Islamic foundation.
That's
if you
right.
read the Quran, you
with
know.
An enlightened on enlightenment.
Yeah, this is very, very bad.
It's bad for the world, though. I mean, it's bad for Egyptians, but these guys will not stay put. They're going to try to go after Israel. They're going to try to go after their neighbors and us. I mean, well, they've been they're the ultimate stealth jihadists. They've been in America for decades.
The Muslim Brotherhood,
taking us, you know, from within, weakening us from within. This is their job.
It's their goal.
Care as Muslim Brotherhood.
It's their goal. listen to Reuters talk about Morsi just like any other political candidate out there, with a stiff and formal style.
Oh, man.
It's like talking about Romney or something, as if they're interchangeable. As bad as Romney is, he's a million times...
It's a different planet, is what it
is. With a stiff and formal style, Morsi cast himself as a reluctant latecomer to the race who cited religious fear of Judgment Day as one of his reasons for running.
Religious fear of Judgment Day?
Yes.
For himself?
Yes.
He's like, if I don't run, I'll die. I'll be killed.
Well, if he doesn't run, then all the horrible things that they talk about happening on Judgment Day in the Quran will happen to him.
In Egypt, to him personally.
And maybe he wants to also save his fellow Muslims in the country from the horrible consequences of Judgment Day if they are not proper Muslims. So this is what he says, right? We're supposed to think he's going to be a true leader of all, but here's, he said, he cited religious fear of Judgment Day as one of his reasons for running. Questions remain, says the story, over the extent to which Morsi will operate independently of other Brotherhood leaders once in office. His manifesto was drawn up by the group's policymakers. And then the role that his opponent might play is a focus as well. So here's Morsi. He says, quote, "I will treat everyone equally and be a servant of the Egyptian people," end quote.
So I will treat every Muslim.
And there should be a big asterisk.
Yes.
Equally according to the Quran.
Yes.
Probably,
exactly
right?
These guys are true believers.
And then it says, "But many Egyptians, not least the Christian minority, remain suspicious of Morsi, and even more so of the group he represents. Anti-Brotherhood sentiment, fueled by both a hostile media and some of the group's policies, has soared in recent weeks." So that's the good sign.
They should get the hell out quick.
Turnout at the election. So again, remember, he won 51% of the total votes cast in the election, although, again, 800,000 of those votes were thrown out.
Mm.
And I think that would almost make up for the difference between, it was 13.2 million versus 12.3 million. This is very, very close, close, close election. Yeah. And then, but here, listen, this is, makes it even worse. The turnout was only 51.8%.
Well, the 50 million strong electorate.
Yeah. So he barely won with 800,000 votes thrown out and only 51.8%.
Well, because most Egyptians, they live on Earth, you know? They live on Earth, and they're not evil.
Now, Odegaard in the chat room is telling us that Morsi got his PhD here in the United States. So that's always exciting, too. That means he probably got a whole...
A PhD in what?
Engineering, probably.
Oh,
okay. I think
it was some kind of engineering. A lot of Muslim terrorists take their engineering. That's right. They get their engineering degree. Muhammad Atta.
I was excited. Now, to me, the most disturbing thing was watching a video that appeared on Breitbart today. Breitbart, sometimes good, sometimes making some errors, at first was portraying the speech that was being given in this video as coming from Morsi himself. But what it turns out is it was being given by an Islamic cleric at an event in which that cleric was introducing Morsi to the crowd.
Yeah.
Okay?
And Morsi told him, "You should not have said that," right? He yelled at him.
Oh, I'm sure, right? So there was an Islamic cleric introducing Morsi. If you go to Breitbart.com, you can watch the video for yourself. There is a huge crowd, lots of chanting, and what they're doing is they're introducing Morsi as the candidate who's going to represent them and save them. And he says that this is the start of the Islamic caliphate.
He actually said that, yeah.
Yeah, that this man, Morsi, is going to be the one to put them back on the road to establishing an Islamic caliphate. And then repeatedly they emphasize that the capital of this Islamic caliphate is not going to be Cairo or anywhere else, but it's going to be Jerusalem.
Yeah.
And then this cleric also calls for millions to march on Jerusalem to make sure, of course, that this happens. And he says that tomorrow Gaza will be freed by this man, and he's gesturing to
tomorrow,
and he's
Gaza
gesturing to a guy near him, and there's people, you know, shaking their heads up and down.
Did he have a sword in his hand yet at that point, or was it just met?
No, I didn't see a sword in his head. But the point is that you've got this guy saying he wants to do a renaissance with an Islamic foundation.
Right.
You have his Islamic cleric supporter who's introducing him at his kind of premier.
The non-Muslim world is watching, so they're going to play it to us. And then this guy slipped. I mean, he slipped up. You know what I mean?
You think that's it?
Of course, this guy.
Oh, this cleric?
Yes, exactly. No, he means it. But what I'm saying is Morrissey said those things because he knows the West is watching. He knows he has to watch himself right now because he doesn't have full power yet.
Oh, so you're talking about what Morrissey
exactly.
said versus what, what the cleric said.
This guy has he don't care. He's being honest.
So this is really, really distressing. We have put resources into this Arab Spring.
I mean,
and now we are seeing them elect a leader who is taking power in the name of establishing an Islamic caliphate with its capital of Jerusalem. And so if you think about this, I mean, the speech that this guy gave happened months ago. There's no way that Benjamin Netanyahu didn't know about this guy and his supporters and what their intentions are. And yet we have him saying congratulate, or not, he doesn't say congratulate him, but he's going to respect the outcome of the election. So he respects an outcome of an election where they elect a leader who is being called on to free the Gaza Strip and to establish Jerusalem as the capital of the new Islamic caliphate.
He's saying, you know what, it's good that the bad guys are in charge now, more or less.
Now, John Kenny wrote on my blog about this. He said, our government continues to send aid to the Egyptian military, whose only purposes are to attack Israel and maintain power in Egypt. He says, the logic is to maintain a voice or some influence with the military. If we end the aid, no influence. This has been the thinking for decades. He says, this seems insane to me. Anybody agree? You know, the similar thing was being discussed. We talked about that with Bolton a little bit, John Bolton, about Pakistan.
Right.
But I think Pakistan might be a different animal than Egypt.
It is a different animal.
Well,
you know what? What did the great Steve Jobs say about the Muslim world when he was quoted in his book? What did he say?
That if you did something,
he says,
damned
basically,
if you do,
you're,
damned if
you're,
you don't.
You're effed if you do, you're effed if you don't. That was his attitude. And that's what a lot of politicians, I guess, feel. We got to be involved with them somehow, some way.
Deborah says, does Netanyahu respect the outcome of the 2009 Iran election too?
I mean, it's just pathetic. Don't say anything or say something honest. Say this is a terrible thing for Israel, for the civilized world. It's terrible. And for Egypt, and for everyone. I mean, but of course, he's a cheap politician in the moment of truth, and he has proven that again and again and again.
In the meantime, we have another wonderful, pleasant story this week. Reuters story published Wednesday, June 20th. Military instructor suspended over Islam course. And if you remember on the May 13th show of this year, you can go back and listen to it in the archives if you haven't heard it yet. We discussed a story in which at the Joint Forces Staff College, there was an instructor by the name of Lieutenant Colonel Matthew Dooley, and he gave a course. The course was called Perspectives on Islam and Islamic Radicalism. And in the podcast of May 13th, I discussed in depth the coverage. Wired magazine gave a whole bunch of details about the course. The truth about the course is that the course actually presented a variety of perspectives on Islam, including the standard party line, but included as one part of the course something very critical of Islam.
Something true.
And some people saying, you know, things like, oh, we're at war with all Muslims and that kind of stuff, which is, of course, the total irrational conclusion. But in terms of being critical of the ideology, yes, we should have a very healthy criticism of Islam. And again, if you need to know more, I would suggest reading the Quran for yourself. That would be the best way. But another thing you could do is I believe, as one of the two oldest shows on that page that you see, you know the link that I put in the top of the chat room there, the iTunes page for this podcast at the iTunes store. You know, if you go to the podcasts section of the iTunes store and you search Don't Let It Go, this podcast, the Blog Talk Radio feed for this podcast will come up, and one of the oldest two podcast there is my interview with Robert Spencer. We have an hour-long interview in which I really try to get to the essence of what's wrong with this religion and why it poses a danger to us. So you can go ahead and look at that stuff there. And I suggest questioning, you know, and looking at Robert Spencer's work more if you have any issues there. But what we find is in our military institutions, our educational institutions, criticisms of Islam are not welcome. So we have on the one hand, Islam taking over in Egypt, and we see exactly what they're calling for as motivated by Islam, which is to establish the Islamic Caliphate with Jerusalem as its capital through a march, a violent movement millions of men going to Jerusalem. That's the consequences of a huge number of people who interpret the religion as calling for this, right?
Correctly.
So here we have the story. You know, it says the instructor of the college course that taught top military officers in the United States was at war with Islam. They make it seem like he didn't give any other view,
right?
All he did is say that we were at war with Islam. He's been relieved of teaching duties, and the course has been ordered redesigned to reflect U.S. policy.
To reflect on reality.
Yeah, you can go read the whole story for yourself. I am disgusted by these people.
Just one quote. They said the inquiry recommends the course be redesigned to include aspects of U.S. policy and reduce its reliance on external instruction. Translation: reduce its reliance on reality, on what is.
Yeah, they don't want any of these external authorities.
And they're playing
in
games with their lives. That's what they're doing, as they've done for decades.
Keep in mind, the course was an elective course.
Yeah.
It was a course that was highly regarded except for one person. It was a single soldier who complained about the content of the course. And the course itself, like I said, it started with a standard presentation.
Was he Muslim or a liberal soldier? Sorry.
Yeah, I have no idea. Probably a liberal. Yeah. It was a standard presentation of Islamic history at the beginning and then all kinds of different perspectives on it. So it presented a balanced approach. It was an elective course at a graduate institution, and nonetheless, you are not able to, in the military, present views critical of Islam today.
I mean, are there views critical of America in the military?
Oh, I'm sure.
What?
I'm sure. I mean, actually, I've told this audience many times, that at the Air Force Academy in Colorado Springs, I heard instructors say that if you thought it was okay what we did in Hiroshima, Nagasaki, and Dresden, then you don't belong in military ethics you don't have an understanding of what they consider to be modern military ethics.
The Department of Defense of Islam.
Yeah, the Reuters story did not even bother to name the instructor who was being suspended. And I went back and looked up his name I felt at least he was entitled to have his name stated so that you realize that an actual human being who has served the military loyally for a long time has been suspended from his duties simply because he presented a course in which part of the views were critical of Islam. His name is Lieutenant Colonel Matthew Dooley. Hats off to him for trying, and I feel bad for him for having this happen to him.
I feel bad for us.
And for us, of course. Zach in the chat room says, Amy, we're not at war with Islam. We're at war with man-caused disasters.
Yeah. So Islam's good. Okay.
Exactly. Anyway, like I said, get educated if you like. That's enough Islam for me for one day. I think I would like to do something a little bit more fun with the remainder of our showtime.
The infidel number two. We're going to discuss that right now.
That's more Islam right now. Do buy The Infidel number two if you want to see bad guys get it.
Yes.
That can always be cathartic after hearing about a story like this. It's fun. So go to Bosch's blog and grab it. So let me tell you, transitioning here, why I think that you should vote for me for president this year instead of Gary Johnson. I just thought of it this week because I was seeing how many people with whom I share a lot of ideas about how this country should be run what direction we should be going in. Even a lot of objectivists or people who call themselves objectivists who are saying they want to vote for Gary Johnson in this election. I also saw a story, and I don't remember where, that said that he is sometimes getting between 2% and 7% of the vote in some states.
And they say, like, yeah, that's a great thing. It's like, well,
if he gets 7% in a state, I would think that is pretty much enough to ensure that Obama could win in that state, because he's taking votes away from Romney. He's certainly not taking votes away from Obama. So, you know, my thought is, look, why are these people voting for Gary Johnson? Right. They say, well, Romney's bad. He's really bad. And I agree. I agree. Romney is bad. But Romney is the way that we get Obama out of here. Well, people say, well, I really think it's time for us to vote consistently with our principles and make a political statement through voting for Gary Johnson to basically show that a candidate like Johnson can win in the future.
As if he's viable. And if it's not viable today, it's a waste.
Well, and here's the other thing. If we get Obama in again, this idea of making statements about freedom for the future,
exactly right.
Who knows?
Freedom ends.
We are at the mercy right now of the justices of the Supreme Court to undo the damage that Obama has done, or at least the bulk of the damage. To me, I see the,
it will be the
big
ultimate
bulk of the damage that he's been doing
right.
is this Obamacare abomination. And they're seriously, I don't care what Drudge says. Drudge has this headline saying, oh, it's going to be the death knell for Obamacare. He's
acting
why
like
he's confident
that
it's going to be repealed.
We don't know. We hope so.
All I know is that I from everything I've studied, the chance of this being overturned in any kind of a decisive, effective way is about 50-50.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're literally at the mercy of this right now.
We are.
So the idea that I want four more years of this guy and that you're going to be making a statement for the future.
And you'll feel better in the present making a statement in the future, while our future will be shot if this guy gets in.
So I just figured, get this guy out. And that's always been my answer. The most important thing is get Obama out. I agree so much with Sunny Lohman. If you subscribe to House of Sunny, she's got a funny video that I think was just her most recent one, where it's the Romney cushion.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Go watch it, because she really expresses how you feel about voting for Romney.
He stinks, but Obama's, you know.
We've got to get him out.
Dangerous.
So then I started thinking about this issue of ideological consistency, that it was so important. You know, ideological consistency, voting according to your principles, is so important in this election to people that they're willing to tolerate four more years of Obama.
Right.
And I thought, well, gee, if you really want ideological consistency, you should vote for me. I can give you examples where I am so much better than Gary Johnson, right? So, for example, we watched Red Eye, and he was asked about
recently,
just in the last couple of weeks. And he was asked about legalization of drugs. And literally in the same breath, he spoke about legalizing drugs and then regulating and taxing them.
Right.
And nobody called him on it, even Greg Gutfeld, whom we love, but sorry, he's just not quite as consistent as the moderator, the ombudsman,
who is
TV's Andy Levy. I guess
That's his full name.
Yeah, TV's Andy Levy. And he's kind of a libertarian, and so he calls out Johnson, and he says, hey, as a libertarian, shouldn't you just be saying legalize it, not tax and regulate it? And Johnson says, yeah, but that's not politically palatable right now.
Right.
Okay, so what I'm telling you is that if you want ideological consistency, vote for me.
That's right.
Right? And, you know,
as much chance,
you know, again, maybe your answer to me is, well, Amy, you're not running for president. You don't have a campaign. You're not on the ballot in any states, and surely you have no chance of winning. Gary Johnson has no chance of winning.
Zero.
He has a campaign. I mean, it's nothing like other people's campaigns, not as well funded and stuff. My point is that you're throwing all those things out with respect to Gary Johnson. You should just throw those factors out with respect to me, especially because I'm way more ideologically consistent with Gary Johnson. Better yet, don't vote for me, because really, I don't want to be president and I'm not qualified and I'm not running.
Well, you're more qualified than these chumps.
I don't wish the presidency on anybody. I mean, in fact, you know, I think Yaron Brook, of all the objectivists I know, would be the best candidate for president. It's not legal for him.
Right.
But still, maybe vote for him, right? But vote for yourself. Write your name in on that ballot, because think about it. If your standard for your voting this year is ideological consistency, consistency with your vision for how the country should be run, what direction we should be going in, yeah, I'm better than Gary Johnson, I assume, or else you wouldn't be listening to this show if
you
agree. I mean, some people disagree with me and listen to the show, I guess, but probably most people agree with me. But look, you're even better because you probably disagree with me on some issues, maybe some issues. Probably at least you would disagree with me about some tactics about how we would get from here to our ideal, pure capitalist society. So really, if your standard is ideological consistency, you should just vote for yourself. That's what I say.
That's it. That's perfect.
So, Bosch, you vote for yourself.
Yeah.
I'll vote for myself.
That's it. And then we'll have Obama.
And then we'll have Obama.
Yeah.
Awesome.
That's great.
But
so we'll feel a little better.
In the chat room, tell me.
But we'll feel a little better when we write our names in. We'll feel better. I mean, right?
That's right.
Yeah,
that's what it's about.
It's about feeling better in that moment.
I mean, I'm telling you, I'm going to throw up when I vote for
Romney. Of course, it's disgusting, the whole idea of it.
But I got to get Obama out.
But hold on. I never see it as voting for Romney. I don't.
No.
I see it as a vote against Obama. And it happens to be that he'll be the beneficiary of it, Romney. That's it.
You know, back when it was John Kerry running, there was a group of people, they called themselves Kerry haters for Kerry.
Yeah.
I think it's Romney haters for Romney. That's
right.
What we are.
Right.
And we're just going to have to be Romney haters for Romney and do it. Because otherwise, if you're going to vote based on ideological consistency and making a statement, I think you should vote for yourself, vote for Yaron Brook, vote for me.
Yep. By the way, check out the only cartoon that Gary Johnson ever inspired me to draw. It's called Gon Johnson. Check it out.
Yeah. And people say, you know, we really want him, right? Johnson. But, you know, Johnson did have a chance.
He did. Numerous opportunities, and he always blew it. He always blew it.
He did blow it. I mean, think about how bad he blew it. In an early debate where he actually said some things and got a little bit of traction.
Yeah.
I remember this so vividly, right? Gary Johnson, if you know much about his personal life, he's known for having scaled tall mountains as a hobby. You know, he's Mr. Out There Rugged. Wilderness guy and everything. And so he's accomplished in that realm. And I can't remember exactly the question that was posed to him. It was a Fox News debate, if I recall. So it was pretty friendly. And they were asking him, they were basically asking him a leading question whereby he could brag about having climbed all these tall mountains and how accomplished he was. And I think things like that are non-trivial in terms of a person's ability to be a leader or accomplish their goals or whatever, right? Because it's, you know, it's something that you've accomplished. He couldn't even remember in a debate that he should talk about something like that when fed a question. He was spoon-fed. And then basically the debate moderator had to come back again and spoon-feed him
that
question.
And the best line he ever had during debates was not his. It was Rush Limbaugh's earlier that day.
Oh, yeah, of course. Now, we have to – well, we don't have to, but we've got a caller here, so I want to talk to this caller and see if this caller is going to vote for me for president. Hi, are you going to vote for me for president?
Sure, why not?
Okay, now who's this? Who am I talking to?
No, I'm wondering if I should David.
David, hi.
Yeah. Okay, here's my question to you.
Okay.
I'm wondering if I should even bother to vote. I'm registered in Seattle.
Okay.
I mean, there's no way that Romney will win here. I mean, it's just, it's you know, the King County voters are, you know, essentially communists. And I'm wondering what you say to me, who's, you know, I don't even feel like getting off, you know, putting in the effort to go vote, just knowing that, I mean, there's no way he'll win here. And,
you know,
we're
definitely in the same boat in California.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, county by county could be different, but for the whole entire state of California, I think it's pretty much hopeless it's going to go for Obama. But whereas, you know, it's funny, last time with McCain, I actually didn't vote. I hate to say that, and now I'm kicking myself a little bit.
I did vote against Obama with McCain.
I want to vote for Romney, not for Romney, but I want to mark that little box that says Romney this time, simply as a statement that Obama is so bad that I'm actually willing to go to the polls and cast a vote for a yucky dude.
Yeah.
I'll do it. You do it. And then we can all afterwards take a shot of something strong and and know.
Hopefully save the country.
Hopefully help save the country. I think we have reason to think that the country might be saved. In a minute here, I want to go on to the signs of Obama desperation that we've been seeing lately. But, I mean, I understand that you're in a particular jurisdiction where Obama's not likely to win anyway, but if you were in a place where it was a little Obama's going to win. Sorry, I misspoke. Where Romney's not likely to win anyway. But if you were in a place where it was close, do you see my point here? As bad as Romney is and as much – I mean, I agree. Gary Johnson is so much better than Romney. Don't get me wrong. But if you're voting based on ideological consistency versus let's just get this horrible guy out, then just vote for yourself, you know? I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm
just trying to find inspiration to actually, because I didn't vote last time either. I was, McCain wasn't exciting to me at all. And I was also sitting there going, God, I don't know, maybe we need an Obama for people to learn the lesson. But, this time I'm just, I'll probably make my way down there, but. And because there's always a question of, okay, what if it comes down to, Washington goes for Obama by one vote, and then, there I am going, huh?
Yeah, you don't want to feel bad that way. That would be really terrible. Yeah. And you might be surprised because, again, I've seen
things
statistics saying that things are looking pretty bad for Obama. So are you ready? I'm going to go ahead and go on and talk about the signs of desperation in the Obama campaign, okay? Thanks for calling, David.
Awesome.
So the first and the most ridiculous and disgusting was the Obama event registry. And this is, I'm just reading to you from the Obama website. This has been passed around and shared on many blogs all over the place. I grabbed it off of somebody's blog. I did not go to Obama's campaign website. It's dangerous to go there. I think you give up information about yourself every time you visit Obama's website, probably. The Obama event registry, it says, got a birthday, anniversary, or wedding coming up? Let your friends know how important this election is to you. Register with Obama 2012 and ask for a donation in lieu of a gift. It's a great way to support the president on your big day. Plus, it's a gift that we can all appreciate, and it goes a lot further than a gravy bowl. Setting up and sharing your registry page is easy, so get started today. And then there's a big red button, and you click it, and you can register with Obama 2012. Now, first of all, let me warn you, because it was either last week or the week before, I can't remember, where I was talking about Obama's technological campaign and how they're using these types of devices at their website in order to collect information about you and to tailor ads at you so that you'll donate more money.
So me and you
so that they
will
can get
vote
you to
for them based on that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. So I want to know
It doesn't make sense.
Who is going to register? I mean, come on, you must have anniversary, birthday, wedding. Register, get some donations for Obama. Doesn't that seem awesome? And people are puking in the chat room here.
No, things are looking bad for him, which is looking good for America.
Yeah.
And also one thing, one of his surrogates, he calls to make voting mandatory. It's a story on Breitbart. Check it out when you can. To make voting mandatory. I mean, this is real desperation.
I mean, this is the oddest thing in the world. How do they think that if this requirement of voting comes from Obama, that it's going to work in Obama's favor?
Exactly, because most of the country is not leftists. I mean, we're not. So,
well, we should plan a big party soon. We should register, right? And we should get everybody to give donations.
Yay.
It used to be we'd have these letter-writing campaigns, and you could send things other than what they were asking for in the little envelope.
Is
so maybe we could send all kinds of weird things. Like
like Atlas Shrugs.
We could say, like, we had a big zombie party.
That's right.
And we could send souvenirs from the zombie party in an envelope
that's
to the
good.
Obama campaign.
I like that.
And say, well, instead of us keeping our souvenirs, we felt like we wanted to give them to you instead.
And I'll give him Atlas, and he'll read it and become an objectivist. And
that's
then
true.
It.
I think we should all send him a copy of Atlas Shrugged. That could be interesting. Everyone here is saying that they're in. We'll go ahead and have this letter writing campaign. We do have another caller here. Hi, are you going to register with the Obama campaign?
Hi, Amy, it's Debbie. And no, that is, you know, at first I laughed when you said that, but then I got this kind of chill, like there's something really creepy about it. I can't quite say what it is, but it's just, it gives me the creeps.
It's so creepy. And you think about this, right? If you can help Obama by getting married and then registering with the Obama campaign, why don't you just get married and divorced? And then you could really support Obama.
Yeah, that's just, it's like he sees it like everything everybody does. It's somehow about him, and like he doesn't understand that people exist for their own sake. You know, I mean, maybe that's what it is. It seems so creepy. Like you're getting married, and that's such a personal, important thing in your life, and it's going to be about Obama, like giving campaign donations to him. It's just
he wants our money, he wants our gifts, he wants everything. Everything.
You know, for years, you could see if you go to buy birthday cards for people at the shops. You browse the card. There are often joke cards, you know, just humorous cards that have the president involved in them. You know, the president's wishing you a happy birthday and there's some kind of funny joke in it. Or it's just a joke, you know, at the president's expense because the person who's buying you the card knows that you don't like whoever the current president is. I've seen these for decades. But this idea of bringing in a serious way into an important event in your life, the president of the United States.
Right.
You know, there was another story that was going around this week. It was Michelle wrote some sort of...
Michelle Obama.
Yeah, Michelle Obama wrote some sort of fundraising statement talking about what a good husband Obama's been and how he's provided for her so well all these years, and now he just wants to help provide for the United States. And so then the transitive property of equality conclusion is that he's going to be the husband of America. This idea of...
Oh.
You know, this personal way is so revolting.
I could donate my books, Propaganda, The Infidel. I think so. My pigment.
If I were you, I think committing. You know, if you send the books directly to the Obama campaign, that's like total committing suicide.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not good. Okay, so I think I'll just register. I mean, what could we register there? I have no idea. I guess. You could go on a computer that can't be traced and register something really funny.
A moving truck for January 23rd.
That's true. We can donate a moving truck to him.
Yeah, for January
23rd. That would be really nice.
2013.
Yeah, January 23rd. He's going to need a moving truck. So I think that would be
nice.
Yeah, I think
if he's America's husband, I want a divorce.
we're all really shooting for that divorce. And the question is, I mean, it's so up in the air. It's harder to get Obama out than it is to get a divorce in this country, I think, actually. I don't know. We're gonna have to see. You know, there's one other thing that he did that was very desperate this week. It's another Breitbart story, actually, says that Bernanke plans to inflate currency just before the election.
That's right.
So I'm going to go ahead and...
So the media can say, you know what, we're on our way. It's okay,
that's
don't
right.
worry about it.
So I'm going to go ahead and post that story on the Don't Let It Go Unheard page on Facebook so that people can spread it around, because if everybody knows that the currency is being inflated and that's what's making them feel like they have a little more wealth in their pockets and increasing consumer confidence, blah, 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 blah. If they really know what's up, it's going to backfire entirely, which is what it's past. So, Deborah, last word, few seconds. What do you think?
Oh, yeah. I don't know. Maybe I can think of something ironic to register for everybody to send him. But I think that most likely I don't want to give him my information because I don't trust him. So, yeah.
Well, some topic. In the meantime, everybody can join me on the Don't Let It Go Unheard page on Facebook. You can follow me on Twitter @AmyPeekoff. And you can also follow this show. If you're listening on the Blog Talk Radio page, there's a little button that says follow. You can click there and keep up with us. We are actually going to be gone for 2 weeks now. We are off for 2 weeks because I am teaching at the Objectivist Conference in San Diego. You can go to objectivistconferences.com to learn more. Come and join me for my privacy lecture.
And check out Neofield number 2 again. Sorry, had to mention it.
Okay, Bosch. We'll talk to you in 2 weeks, or actually 3 weeks. Take care. Bye-bye.